Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 456, How to Train Your Dragon 3.
What? It's not the title of the movie. There's no 3 of the title.
There's not? Well, no. I don't give a enough. Oh, yeah, what is Hidden Ranch Valley Dressing? What is it?
Hidden Ranch Valley Dressing. Yes. Got it. It's one of those, you know, get the number and sometimes you get just the subtitle. And
yeah.
It can get confusing because the second one was just a number. It was How to Train Your Dragon 2, and this one is just The Hidden World.
Doesn't that kind of screw up like the numbering system, or like when you put your DVDs alphabetically or whatnot? Because, mm-hmm. you know, well, I guess you have numbers and then title. You couldn't go title and then a number. That would screw it up, you know, because one.
I'm used to comic books where it's all alphanumerical. Yeah. But then you get really screwed up because then you have all the, you know, Spider-Man has like 9 different books now. And
yeah.
But it all goes back to Rambo. Rambo started that.
Oh, right. With the screwed up. Yeah. Rambo 2 First Blood.
It was like, no. So it goes, well, hang on. First off, let's introduce ourselves. We have a guest who's sitting there is like, can I talk? Can I not talk? So joining us today via Skype phone is J.D. Duran from the In Session Film Podcast. Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of the show. So when Kevin invited me on, I geeked out in joy and here I am. So thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you for taking time out of your day. And before we get too far afield, as I like to say, everyone else can go around the table and introduce themselves.
Yeah, my name is Steve Kelly and I'm a writer with the Review STL.
And this is Kevin. I'm a co-host of the Real Spoilers Podcast.
And I'm Tom. I'm visiting from the Clip Out Podcast.
JD, Tom has another podcast that he's way more popular than this one, and so he's now a guest.
I'm guest on our own podcast because the other one's so much more popular. Which is, it's all about fitness, which I know looking at me, you're like, what? And you're right. That's part of the joke is that I don't do it.
JD does a podcast with Brendan, and I want him to tell people a little bit about his podcast. But he had me on the podcast to talk about mid-90s, and so I really appreciated them having me on to talk about that one. And why don't you tell people a little bit about the show?
Yeah, so like you said, I co-host with my good friend Brendan Cassidy, and we typically review some sort of new release, but we try to vary it up between, some of your bigger films, but we will throw in some of your smaller indie films or art house films. And we couple that with some sort of top 3 list that we do each week on the show. We have a Friday show that's entirely dedicated to indie films and art house films as well. So, yeah, we're expanding out. We got a new Oscar show as well that comes out every other week. So, yeah, our little brand over here is doing new things, which is both exciting and frustrating to my wife. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, and you know, their show, they're one of those smart podcasts with the show prep and the segments. And they know what they're talking about type things.
That sounds like a lot of work. No wonder your wife's mad.
Yeah. So it's a great show, though. I mean,
it is a lot of work.
They know their stuff. And so it's always a pleasure to listen to. And I'm really excited to have JD on.
Yeah. My other podcast is like that. But my wife does all that. So it makes it easier.
Nice.
See, you need to have your wife join your podcast, JD. That's the solution.
Well, before we had Sam, our son, she did guest a few times, probably begrudgingly, but she was definitely on the show. If you go back to the archive back in 2014, she joined us for, was it 50 Shades of Grey?
We did that too. Yeah. We had our wives on and did like a couples episode for the 50, which is smart. Yeah. Like, I put them on the dirty episodes. Yeah. It's just research, honey.
Exactly. And she joined me for About Time as well in 2013. And that was one she genuinely enjoyed. Like, she liked that movie. She liked talking about it. It was like the one and only time she's ever participated in any sort of way. where she actually liked it. Other than that, I think she just puts up with it. But I'm grateful because she's been doing that for 6 years now.
Yes, it's nice to find one that'll let you do that.
Put up with your crap.
Yeah, especially post having a kid, because anyone that's a parent knows that things get much more amplified when you have a little toddler running around. So the fact that she's still putting up with it is amazing. So I'm very, very grateful.
Awesome. Well, circling back around, we were talking about Rambo. So Rambo goes First Blood, and then Rambo, First Blood 2, and then Rambo 3. So there was never a Rambo 2.
Oh, that's right. The movie was called First Blood, right? Rambo.
Right. They tried to do the Indiana Jones thing where they went back in time and called it Rambo First Blood.
But it was just...
But as someone who lived through it, that's total BS. That never happened. It was always called First Blood, and then it was called Rambo First Blood 2, and then the third one was just Rambo 3, which no mention of First Blood. I think because they took a lot of heat, like... First Blood 2 would be Second Blood. Like, that doesn't... like, none of this makes any sense whatsoever.
Oh, so. Somewhere there's a librarian pulling their hair out trying to Dewey Decimalize and organize all the Rambo movies at the rental section.
So, I guess before we jump into the film proper, some quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, where you can go there, rate, review, subscribe, and, you know... We're always horned out for the reviews. I had a thought. I'm just going to put this out there. Like, sometimes reviews, people leave some pretty lengthy reviews, right? Sure. Like, you don't have to do that. Like, you can just be like, hey, I like this podcast a lot. Done. So if that's your stumbling block.
That's true. Like, some people might be intimidated. Like, they've heard some of the reviews we've read.
Right.
And they're like, oh, God, I can't gush about the show like that. Or, like, I only kind of like the show.
I'm not a good writer. I don't put words together. So, like, you don't have to do this big, giant thing. You can just be like, I like the show a lot. 5 stars, done. Like,
or just ask for more Steve Kelly on the podcast.
Not go crazy.
If you want all your friends to review and rate the show 5 stars, they can say anything they want about you on there. Yes. We don't care.
It's America.
Yeah.
So anyway, if that's ever been a stumbling block for you, don't feel like you got to live up to something. Just go and type in like 5 stars, loved it, thanks. So
5 stars, Kevin's the best. Love the box office report. Yeah, go for it.
I know everybody's pouring out for their own personal mention. We're available at facebook.com/RealSpoilers. You can go there, like the page, join the League of Show Sharers, and all that fun stuff. So I guess, Kevin's giving me the stink eye. Our Patreon account at patreon.com/RealSpoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content.
And we started doing video segments to promote the show. It's something that Tom has done on the popular podcast he does. And I just used some of the Patreon money to buy a little professional phone tripod that we could put to the right level. So I know we had some positive feedback and also some commentary on our angles for our videos and such. We knew about that. We only did it one time and didn't have the tripod. So now we have the equipment, and that is the kind of stuff that you get. So now you are improving the show with your patronage.
You don't have to look at our double chins.
We
can hide them now. Yeah. So okay, enough of all that. Let's dig into the movie, shall we?
First of all, I want to say You know, again, thank you guys for joining us. And I know that you both are huge fans of this mm-hmm. series. I've really enjoyed it. I wouldn't call myself like a super fan of the series, but I kind of wanted to talk to you guys about where you landed on all the other films.
I thought it was probably the second best of the trilogy. I would still say the first was the best, The Hidden World, and then two. I really felt like in terms of ending the trilogy, concluding, it was probably about as well as you could have done. I mean, there's some really sappy parts, a little, maybe a little over emotional, but I don't think that they could have written it any better. You consider the audience is geared toward, like, you know, kids. They want a happy ending to a trilogy, and I thought they did a really good job without making it more darker or, I'm stumbling over my words here. I'm really tired. I had a long weekend. Apparently my friends thought I was missing your dad.
Oh, well, we're glad you're here. Thank you. Glad you're alive, first and foremost. But so were you a huge fan of the first two, though, going into this one?
Absolutely. Like, I didn't see the first one that came out in theaters. I didn't see it until one of my friends told me about it and thought I might really like it. So saw the first one, absolutely loved it. Saw the second one in theaters, loved it. And so I've been waiting for this one for, I guess it came out in 2014, the second one. So I guess I've been waiting for about 4.5-5 years.
Okay, awesome. And so, JD, what's your history with this franchise?
Well, I am a big fan. So I think that first How to Train Your Dragon is severely underrated. And I guess take this with a grain of salt if you must. But How to Train Your Dragon 2, I'm very much on record, at least on our show, of saying that I think it's the best animated sequel of all time. I think it's that good. It's a deeply rich and emotionally layered film. It takes risk. It shows the ramifications of those risks that most animated films aren't willing to do. Even Toy Story 3, a film I adore with every fiber of my being, shows us stakes, but shows us zero ramifications of said stakes. Where How to Train Your Dragon, the first film and the second film, shows us that there is something at stake and sometimes there is a cost to that. And I think that just amplifies much of what those films are about. Not just dramatically, but thematically as well. So I love these two films. And honestly, and again, take this with a grain of salt if you must, but I'm pretty confident in that if this wasn't a DreamWorks trilogy, if you just flipped out DreamWorks with Pixar, and I think the discourse on these films would be vastly different. I think it's because it's coming from DreamWorks, a lesser tier animated studio, people tend to be like, you know, they're fine. When I think they're much, much more than that. I think if you put Pixar in front of it, it's a completely different conversation. I think it's as simple as that. But yeah, these films, I think, are as good as anything Pixar or Disney's ever put out, hands down.
And it's interesting that you say that, and especially bringing up the risk and the ramifications of the actions, because, you know, in that second one, I think the biggest thing that stands out is Hiccup's dad dying, and you're used in animated films, aside from, you know, the mom dying in the first 3 seconds of a Disney film.
Yeah,
you don't usually get...
Right, a parent death in a Disney movie is typically, it sets up the action, so it's a character you're not invested in the same way that you were with Hiccup's dad.
You never worry about Donkey dying in the Shrek movies. I mean, that when you have a huge character that you're invested in, like Hiccup's dad, voiced by Gerard Butler, which I think these movies are some of Gerard Butler's best work in his career. Like, I think it's crazy how good he is in these movies, and it's an animated thing. Yeah. But, like, you don't think, oh, Gerard Butler, voice actor, but, like, he's acting in these movies, and it just shows you the stakes are real. People can actually die, and so it does set you up for, I think, a better experience at the movies, whereas when you go to Toy Story, I mean, I guess with three, a lot of people, you're like, oh, they're not going to do that, but you're like, are they really going to do this? Like, they got the closest they could to actually.
Right.
But at the end of the day,
they held that beat in Toy Story 3 for a really long time, to where I was like, are they really going? Like, because it's like, because Pixar is just crazy enough to do it, especially back then. I don't think they're quite that brave now, but at that point in time, and especially because it was positioned as the last one,
right?
And it was like, like, oh, I could.
How crazy would that be, though? These billion-dollar movies, these kids' movies.
Yeah.
If they would have killed off any or all of them. Like, it just, you know, at the end of the day, like, I had that feeling, too, because of the way they handled it. But, again, I never really thought, like, oh, yeah, they're going to kill them off. No, right. Like, you know, and so I agree. Yeah. These movies, there are stakes, and it feels real. I think they're really masterfully done. And it's interesting, too, because the director of these last two films and the co-director of the first one came over from Disney. Mm-hmm. So you had Dean DeBlois, and then is it Chris Sanders was the co-director?
I think so.
Yeah, he is the voice of Stitch, and he wrote Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, okay.
And then Dean DeBlois was a director on Lilo and Stitch. So that's the connection. So they.
So do they still let him go back and voice Stitch when they need it for like things in the theme park or?
I mean, I don't think they ever got a new voice. Now, I could be wrong, and there's probably a lot of people that can do a clever Stitch impression, but right. It's just interesting that I went back and I watched Mulan recently, and that dog, the little dog, sounds a lot like Stitch in Mulan. And right. I'm like, yeah, that's Chris. That's him. And so
that dragon sounds like Donkey. Did you ever notice that?
What? That's good connection there.
Yeah.
I think it's Chris Sanders co-wrote Mulan.
Yeah.
And then he went on to, and then did the voice of that dog. And then he's the voice of Stitch and the director of Lilo and Stitch. And then jumped over to DreamWorks. And I guess DeBlois and Chris Sanders co-directed the first one. And then these last two have been solo outings for DeBlois.
Gotcha.
So anyway, but there's a Disney history there that carries over. I'm not going to repeat what JD said, but the quality of these films, the writing, the cinematography, they're beautiful films. I mean,
oh my God. Yeah.
Like I really liked the world building of the second one. And I felt like this one like didn't build on that. And that left me disappointed. It was just like, oh, there's this whole other world for dragons. It's right over here. And now we're there. Like it just felt like such an easy achievement that it just like, I spent the bulk of this movie bored, perfectly honest, and I think the reason it's getting as good of reviews as it is I think the last 20-25 minutes gets really good, but leading up to that, like, I was so bored and just I just was not invested in this movie at all, and I don't know, the theater I saw it in anyway, it was very dim, like the picture was dim. And it looked cheap to me. Like I didn't get the whole like, oh, the animation on this one is beautiful. I thought it looked cheap in a lot of ways. That opening scene where they're trying to save dragons or whatever, like I didn't notice that there was lots of like fog and smoke, and it just felt like it was like a way to not have to animate as much. Like, oh, we'll just have it be lots of smoke and we can't really see anything. And it just felt like I know that second one underperformed, and I felt like they slashed the budget and had to make concessions. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help the way you felt about it. The only thing, you know, the thing that I hate about that is just on the off chance, I mean, when I saw it, the film looked beautiful. I mean, this looks the other two looked beautiful, and especially for at the time. And I mean, this is the best looking one. Cinematic. It's very cinematic, very gorgeous colors, CGI. I mean, all the designs are very detailed, and I thought it looked brilliant. And so I hate to think that you think that because you got a bad theater for it. And I know there's nothing you can do. I mean, that's how they showed it to you. So I totally.
And I
get
went
it.
To a press screening. So like, if I got a bad theater for it, then they need to screen them at different movies.
But how many press screenings have you been to where something screwed up too?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so like, I'm just saying it's not beyond, I mean, we've had movies that start half hour late, movies that never start, movies that start in 3D when they're supposed to be 2D with no glasses. So like the idea that you maybe went to a press screening and the projector was set too dim or wasn't calibrated right, like it's a possibility. And
a possibility. I just think that then that promotion company needs to do a better job.
Totally. JD, I mean, as far as brightness, colors, I mean, did the movie seem dark, too dark to you at any point in time?
I would be very curious for you to rewatch the film in a different theater and come out. If you came out saying the same thing, I mean, that's totally fair. But I think it's maybe the most gorgeous of the three. And I don't even know if it's close. And I love the second film. In terms of its visuals, it's pretty stunning. But yeah, the color palette, especially once you get into the hidden world, those bright hues and the varying colors, it is breathtaking to watch.
Pandora Flight of Passage.
Right.
or even that dance sequence between the Light Fury and Toothless. And one of the first things I said on Twitter after watching it is that I think it rivals the dance sequence in WALL-E. I think it's that gorgeous. And the romanticism there is just blissful. And I think it's not just the imagery, but the score by John Powell, I think, amplifies a lot of that as well. But it's just a breathtaking sequence. I think visually, though, it's a stunner. I think it's quite evocative.
Awesome. And Steve, did it seem dark to you? Or
I guess so. I actually was at the same screening as Tom.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't think it was too bad. Like,
oh, so
I
Tom's
actually
just
thought
broken.
I thought it was.
I'm dead on the inside.
No, I actually I agree 100% with what JD was saying. I mean, that scene where they get to find the hidden world and they're flying through it, you see all these visuals and just these colors in the sky.
Yeah,
it's absolutely gorgeous.
I will agree that, and I even said the last 20 minutes of the movie I thought were really good.
Talk about stick the landing. I mean, this movie, if there ever was a definition of sticks the landing.
Right. But and because the hidden world is so bright, I think it overcame the dimness of whatever we were looking
at. Were you in 3D?
No, that's, okay. I was going to say that. That's the other thing that made me so frustrated with how dark this movie was, is that, like I'll give a 3D movie a little bit of latitude because I know that, like, you're wearing those glasses, but we saw a 2D version of this movie.
Remember A Christmas Carol in 3D? One of the early CG 3D movies, and that movie's set in dark London,
right?
And then you put 3D before the projectors were that good. I mean, that was, you may as well have been in the dark trying
to.
Yeah,
it might as well have been a radio drama.
That's a good looking movie too, but like the way theaters were back then, it's like the projectors weren't as good. They were getting their first 3D projectors and like things just weren't.
And then they set the entire movie against candlelight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, literally, that's what it was. So, okay, cool. Well, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the visuals and stuff. But yeah, let's get into the movie. Was it a year after the second one that this takes place?
Yeah, about a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's correct.
So this takes place a year later, and basically we find out that the village of Burke has been growing over these past years, ever since Hiccup and his friends brought dragons. Their island is just overflowing with dragons. They're everywhere. You turn around, there's a dragon there. They're knocking stuff over. The film begins with a pretty cool, stealthy, scene of, they've been going and rescuing dragons, and that's why Burke is overflowing. And so you get Hiccup with his really cool dragon scale armor. He's got his lightsaber flame sword that we saw in the second one, right?
Yeah.
And it's really cool. I really like it.
It's nice to see something like that, a movie add something like that that you know they can't sell as a toy.
Mom, I want the flame sword.
Which is what penny lawsuits be worth it.
Here's a flaming sword, child.
Absolutely.
Have at it.
You know the toy is just a yellow or an orange translucent piece of plastic with like some little flames coming off of it. But you know, it's a really cool scene, but basically the whole point of it is to show you that they've been out trying to rescue dragons. And so this is the scene Tom was talking about. There's a lot of smoke and fog and whatever, but they're trying to rescue all these dragons, and so you get all your friends coming, and they eventually break free all of the dragons from one of the sets of bad guys in this movie. But don't we get a glimpse at this point when they leave of the Light Fury for the first time?
That
she comes, but she was invisible, right? And she had like turned herself visible after they left.
Yeah.
Because that's right. Why they don't rescue her, because they didn't see her there, and she kind of just turns herself visible. So that's the first time we see, like, whoa, she can do some stuff we've never seen Toothless do. And we'll find out later there's some other things that Toothless can do, but we haven't seen him do yet. So that's our first look, and the posters, the trailers, we've all seen this white Night Fury. And so that's the big selling point of this third film as far as new characters, toys, you name it. They get back to Burke. It's overcrowded. We are introduced to everybody and mostly the same voice cast, except for TJ Miller, for obvious reasons, has been recast, especially when they're making this movie. Like, I know the heat's kind of died down a little bit, but, you know, when they're in the middle of filming this movie, I can see why they were like,
yeah. That guy did a pretty good TJ Miller, I thought.
It was jarring to me. I think because TJ Miller's voice is so distinct. As soon as he started talking, I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Well, because I did spend my time like, is that TJ Miller? it was at least close enough to maybe question it.
Yeah, you'd know though. But it's like, I get it. And especially it's a kids movie. We've seen the way that controversy has surrounded some of these other films, and especially animated films. And it's like, DreamWorks is just like, nope, not touching it. Like,
I thought it was good to replace TJ Miller in the role. I thought it was odd that they used John Lasseter.
No. It's a weird choice.
It was an odd choice.
It's a weird choice.
Yeah. So seriously though, who is it? A name? Is it anybody we know?
It's Justin Ruppel. Who
is that?
Voiced Tough Nut this time around.
Do we know him? Because I looked it up before the show, and I'm like, who was that? I don't know him.
I mean, looking through his credits on IMDb, there's not much that stands out, just a bunch of miscellaneous and small stuff. So,
okay.
No one that I'm really familiar with. I don't think many people would be.
He doesn't even have his own
entry
in Wikipedia.
And maybe that's why. They wanted to get someone that wouldn't be distracting.
That's true. Oh, you replaced TJ Miller with Claire Danes. That's a weird choice. Like, that's going to be distracting.
They should have just used that Jason Mantzoukas or however
Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah,
I would have loved if this movie.
Well, just because he replaced him in the Mucinex commercials.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah. That's hilarious.
Which is still it irritates me because it should be pronounced Mucinex.
Right, because it's mucus, not
it's
mucus.
Not clearing out your mucus. Like I called it Mucinex for years, and my wife because and I will say this, it's a really good product and it's very effective. But but I've always called it
lining
Mucinex.
Up our next sponsor, right?
Yeah,
right.
I'll whore out. I don't care.
Oh yeah, we will promote.
But
Joe could probably use some on some episodes, yeah. So it'd be a perfect.
But I'm
product
like Mucinex. Why would you make that a soft C? It's a hard C, like my ex-wife. Anyway.
Oh, there's a lot of that on the show, JD. Yeah. We just breeze right past it. Yeah. It doesn't really affect us anymore. So they get back to town. It's overflowing, like I said, for the 12th time. And the other conflict is that it's time for Astrid and Hiccup to get married. Gobber, who is Craig Ferguson, who I love him in these movies. I think he's really funny. I think he's he's got that. He has another distinct voice where it's like you can't replace Craig Ferguson. That's fantastic. And he's just giving him trouble. Like, it's time for you to get married. You are the leader of this village, you know, the dad's been passed away for some time now, and it's time for you to take over, take a wife, have a family.
You know what I've always wanted, though? I mean, Hiccup's dad is Gerard Butler's voice.
Yeah.
His mom, Cate Blanchett's voice. Or what? Blanchett?
Cate Blanchett.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he have an accent?
None of the kids have accents.
Well, they're like transplants. Like, maybe they're from a different place, and then Burke is in a non... I'm just trying to justify it.
Yeah, none of the kids have. I guess maybe when you hit maturity, your accent kicks in, like pubes.
Have you heard Jay Baruchel's voice? Like, have him try to do an accent.
He did do that one line with an accent.
Probably not a good idea.
He did do one line with the accent in this one. Like, he was mocking somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's mocking his dad. Yeah.
But,
and that's fine. But, like, yeah, try to have him for a whole movie seriously do an acting job with an accent. And
let's do nothing to make his voice more annoying.
I will say, though, you know, Jay Baruchel, he was in all those, like, dumb comedies that, you know, I grew up in high school and people Steve's age. Like, we grew up with him and all these things, and his voice was so jarring. Like, not jarring. His voice was so
distinctive.
It's a nasally. He's got that voice. That's kind of his thing. I will say he tones it down a lot for these movies. I don't think it shows through in these ones.
I agree.
And he's really good in these movies. But yeah, I think his voice is definitely toned down. And I appreciate that because I don't think we could do an hour and a half animated because you can't see him. So it's like if we were just to hear his normal voice, it would probably be a little bit.
It's just so jarring because I'm a big fan of the Goon movies. And he's in there and he's just like this completely foul-mouthed dude. Just like saying all sorts of profanity and you know, slang terms for parts of anatomy, and then you see him in How to Train Your Dragon. He's just this overall wholesome good guy. It's like, hey, I got a dragon.
Yeah.
You see that a lot in cartoons. Though, I mean, for years, I mean, Buddy Hackett. If you ever saw Buddy Hackett stand up, holy crap! That dude, I mean, like, he would make Don Rickles blush.
Yeah.
But he was in all those Herbie the Love Bug movies, and of course he was the seagull or whatever in Little Mermaid.
You know, Bob Saget is, I think, the number one. He's the number one example of that, just because everyone grew up with, I mean, people our age, he was the dad on Full House, the wholesome dad on Full House. Robin Williams, his stand-up's filthy, and it's like, you know, the genie from Aladdin, let's take my kids to see his stand-up. Bad idea. So totally, and then, I mean, even T.J. Miller. Yeah. I mean, that guy's filthy in stand-up. And
Patton Oswalt, and he's not filthy, but he can get a little...
Totally, yeah. So it's like, you know, when they're casting you for a kid's movie, and they're giving you that paycheck. Hey, tone it down.
Absolutely.
Kids movie. So Hiccup is struggling with that. So he's dealing with not only that overcrowding situation, but also the pressure to be married to Astrid. Him and Astrid have a very playful relationship. You know, it's not, Astrid isn't the most romantic person in the world. And he even mentions that in this movie. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's not on his number one priority list, but he's always being kind of nudged to, you know, go that direction. We see Hiccup on a cliff and he's playing fetch with Toothless, which I thought was a really good scene. He takes off his leg and throws it to him and, you know, he brings it back slobbery. And Astrid comes and finds him. And this is where he pitches the idea of the hidden world. I think we see a flashback here of him talking to his dad, you know, and his dad is telling him the story of dragons and the hidden world. And so he realizes that the idea to, you know, get them to is to get them to a place where they and the dragons will have enough room. I think it was in the previous scene where one of the huge dragons that they brought back starts bowling over things in the village and they start toppling like dominoes.
Yeah.
So it's a huge problem. Like their village is going to be destroyed. So he's just like, yeah, let's go find the hidden world. And I can definitely see where Tom's coming from, because you've got this mysterious hidden world. It's a fairy tale. His dad told him about it. And Hiccup's just like, let's head this direction. And then eventually,
and then they look and look and look, and they're like, oh, we can't find it. And we'll just stop here and build a whole new town. And then later in the movie, it's like, well, let's look a little bit more. Oh, there it is.
Like, to be fair, they did stop to rest. Like, all the people were like, yeah, we're tired of traveling.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to keep going, so.
I get that. Yeah. I just mean in terms of, like, it's that close.
Right.
Like, it was not really an arduous task to find the Hidden Valley. As far as hidden worlds go, it's not one of your better hidden ones.
So they leave once they get to the new campsite that everyone, like, they instantly camp. They're like, or they want to stay there. And like, here, it's New Burke. And Hiccup's like, yeah, we're stopping to rest and take a pee break. And they all want to live there. We're introduced to the Kit Harington character, who is from the last movie. Later on, he's going to tell us about the bad guy. So Hiccup and Toothless, they go off into the woods, and Hiccup spots a dart, and so he finds out that it's from Grimmel, the bad guy of this movie, and he is, like, supposedly, I guess he's a dragon hunter, would be what you would call his profession, and he has allegedly killed all of the Night Furies. So that's his thing. He wants to kill every single Night Fury, and so
his goal is to not have a job.
Yeah, exactly. He wants to retire. We wouldn't. So when he's talking to the guys that had all the dragons that the gang busted out in the opening scene, they're like, they got away, and they had a Night Fury. And you see Grimmel's eyes, you know, pop open like Night Fury. And so that is basically his motivation for the movie, is that they've got all the Night Furies. Now, the only thing that confused me about this, guys, and maybe JD, you can answer this one. The people at that camp had a Light Fury, what they term, I think Astrid terms, as a Light Fury. It is a white Night Fury. Mm-hmm. It's still a Night Fury. Yeah. Why doesn't he want to kill the white Night Fury? Is that, I mean, that just seems kind of weird.
Because he's a racist.
Other than that, I mean, is that
like,
just made, a...
Like, I was just like, a white Night Fury? Like, white Knight? Like the Klan? Like, that's maybe come up with a different name.
Which is, I think, why pretty soon. I mean, they're saying it's a white Night Fury. You know,
right.
And so I think that's why the Light Fury came out pretty quickly.
That was a good move on their part.
But I mean, I know kids movie and we're brushing along, but I mean, tell me if there's a real explanation for why he doesn't want to kill the Light Fury.
My thought was that he was basically going to use her to lure.
Totally. And that's what he does.
Light Fury,
but before he knew that there was a.
But we don't know if he even knew that she existed, because when she's on that boat at the beginning, that's not Grimmel's ship.
True,
that's
true.
A completely different clan, and obviously she escapes from that. So the film never explores it, but suggests that perhaps Grimmel just didn't realize until she, you know, comes back into the fold the second time around, and then she uses her to lure out Toothless. So. Which the way things play out in the end, I got the feeling that his plan was to kill both of them eventually.
Absolutely.
But needed to use her to get to Toothless first.
Okay, yeah, that's probably the most reasonable explanation. He didn't know she existed and then decided to use her until he had no use for her, meaning taking out Toothless. So makes sense. So that's his plan, is to let her loose and have them do their, you know, their mating dance and all that we see, which... I mean, it's pretty hilarious. Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. The fact that just the way that when they see each other, they like instantly imprint, like when two Night Furies see, or, you know, female, male Night Fury, whatever the technical reason is behind it, they instantly, like, Toothless is fallen mad in love with the Light Fury, and that whole ordeal is just hilarious.
No, they just videotaped me at the bar trying to hit on women.
Yeah.
They turned that into a
looked pretty, yeah, looked pretty similar. I've been at the bar with you, Steve.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty right. But he finds this poison dart, so he brings it back to the village. Toothless is acting weird, and that's where Eret, the Kit Harington character, is like, this is Grimmel, and this is where we get our exposition of, you know, the Night Fury hunter, the dragon hunter. He wants to kill them all. He'll be back. There's no way that he's, you know, going to be far away from you. So later that night, he comes to the tent, and we should say, is it's F. Murray Abraham that plays Grimmel, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And so While I think that his voicing was fine, I did find him to be the weakest part of the movie. I don't know if any of you guys agree, but his character's motivation and the way that he was a little bit mustache twirling, like he had Toothless dead to rights so many times in this movie. And I know he's a main character, and I know you're not going to kill off Toothless, but he had Toothless so many times and didn't kill him when he had the chance. And I just thought that his villain was kind of the weak spot.
It was just kind of a cliche. Like, it felt like kind of a standard villain take.
Yeah. I don't know. JD, what were your thoughts on him as a villain overall?
It's a little bit twofold. I don't find him as interesting as the villain in the second film, but I don't completely dislike Grimmel either, because I do think that while he's perhaps misused in that first act, because there's a lot of clunky humor in that first act that is clearly pandering to young children. And I can forgive it because I understand it's not aimed at me, but I can also vouch for its effectiveness because my son absolutely adored, I think, a lot of that humor in that first act. But once Grimmel takes his turn kind of more toward the middle section of the film, I think what he does narratively on the surface, it could come off as maybe, like you guys are saying, a little underutilized, but I think thematically he serves a pivotal role. And for me, that's why I ultimately enjoyed the character, not so much for what he does, but for what he allows our central protagonist to do. And that's what the heart of these films is all about anyway. So in that sense, I do like the character.
Okay, sure. And I mean, again, like I said, I cut these movies a little slack because, as you said, I mean, some of the writing is going to be for kids. You have to entertain kids first and foremost. I think the real quality marker of an animated film is being able to have the kids enjoy it and also have the parents enjoy being along there for the ride. That's what Shrek did. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's what a lot of the Pixar movies do. These movies certainly do that, to where they have a huge following of adults, and these are not just for kids. But they do balance that pretty well. So I definitely cut them some slack in those arenas. And again, you're not going to be you can't kill Toothless or Hiccup 30 minutes into this movie. The stakes are real, but they're not that real.
Right.
To where, you know, he's got them dead to rights and he lets them go and you're like, well, that's not believable. I mean, so yeah, it's a forgiving. Toothless, I guess later in that scene, he's wandering around in the woods and he runs into the Light Fury. And so these two are infatuated. This is the first time where they're circling each other, or Toothless is circling and acting all goofy. We see him fall in love. But we find out that this Light Fury is not too keen on humans. Toothless, I think, steps on a twig. And as soon as she hears that twig, a huge purple fire blast is shot in that direction. And when a second one goes off, I mean, Hiccup is so hypnotized by seeing this Light Fury that he's about to get blown up, and Astrid comes and like pushes him out of the way as he's about to be exploded. So like, this thing is not messing around with humans, and rightfully so. She's been caged by the other humans in this. So she is not as accustomed as the other dragons and our friends in this. So we're introduced to her. She ends up being scared away. And that evening, Grimmel comes to the village. So he has been tracking and using the Light Fury as bait. And this is where we get this first interaction between Hiccup and Grimmel, which I think was a pretty good showdown. It's a pretty neat action scene. And you think that Grimmel has Hiccup dead to rights, but it was a trap. So he had Fish Legs, who's Christopher Mintz-Plasse, who's always great in these movies. I mean, another distinct voice there. You think that Toothless is under a blanket, and so Grimmel goes and shoots a tranquilizer to take out Toothless, and it's really him. So some comedy there, but there's a huge showdown where they have set this trap for Grimmel, and when you think that they've got him, his dragons come busting through the roof, and he has some pretty crazy dragons. Like, these things are acid breathing. They've got this green stuff that just melts through everything. And so you can see that this guy, although he is a dragon hunter and he's trying to kill the Night Furies, he also has a great control over other dragons. And
that scene and the later scene where they actually go to his base and try to track him down, it kind of had for me a Ocean's 12 feel, in that you're basically trying to see both sides one up each other, be like one step ahead of each other, you know? And it's like, nope, you just, when you think you have the upper hand, turns out this guy's been thinking that all along, and he's got you beat. He's got you dead to rights. And then it happens over and over and over again.
Kind of like a Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty situation. The I do like that. I agree. It's pretty cool. And Hiccup some credit, like in that first scene, I didn't see that happening. Like him trapping him already. He's just heard of Grimmel, and I thought, oh man, this guy snuck up on him. He has the upper hand. He's going to capture Toothless right here. And I mean, they had a pretty good plan. It was fun. But yeah, this guy has weaponized dragons in a way where, you know, our heroes use them, but like this guy's not messing around. So he's able to escape, and this is where, I mean, things are, his house is destroyed. A lot of the village has been set on fire. So Hiccup has to call a town meeting and get everyone gathered in the middle of the night, because he realizes that this guy, as we said, is a huge threat. Like, he's not going to stop at any cost. They have to leave the village. They know it's already overcrowded. So the perfect solution is, you know, to find a new place. And his idea is to find this hidden world. They've got all these dragons, and he wants to bring them to the place where they belong. So his great idea is that they will make their new Burk will be the hidden world, which, I mean, I think it's a little naive of him to think that the hidden world for dragons will be, you know,
yeah, it's kind of a cop out.
Housing humans. But I mean, he doesn't know. And yeah. I get his intentions. So
we'll
I
just call this the new world. Yeah. Or the hidden world, right? You know what I mean?
So they all agree, and they head out. I mean, it's as easy as that. And so, again, to Tom's point, I mean, it's pretty quick the way they set out. Everyone's okay to leave. Let's just head this direction to the hidden world. Yeah.
Ta-da.
Yeah, and they guessed the right direction, coincidentally, because Toothless cannot survive in the cold. So they had to end up going the other direction. I don't remember, you know, east, west, whatever it was, but they set out in one particular direction.
They went west.
They went west. Okay.
And to be fair, though, like, it really did look like where they went was kind of on the edge of that map that Grimmel has.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, so it doesn't really give us a sense of scale as to how long they actually traveled. I mean, it could have been, you know, could have been a few weeks
or
something.
That's true. So maybe it was just a big time jump, because, I mean, it is like, we got to leave, and then they're all out there flying, which, I mean, again, this movie is so beautifully animated with the water, all the dragons traveling with all the village, their stuff, their houses, their belongings, and, I mean, it's a really neat scene with everything that's going on, but they do pretty much, they go from the village, they go from Burk to in the air to resting, and then, as Tom said, it's right outside the hidden world. So
I feel like they didn't have the courage to tell the story they wanted to tell, which was how they find the hidden world. And that they got some sort of studio notes that were like, we need a big villain. And so the Grimmel stuff just kind of felt arbitrary, and the kind of thing you see in any kid's movie, where if they would have focused more on, like, I would have been more interested in seeing. And coming off the last movie, I felt like it was setting up more for a movie like this, where it's going to be less about there's this big bad, you know, obviously bad guy trying to, you know, disrupt them in some capacity, instead be about like the internal struggles of people in terms of like, well, I don't want to leave my home, and I don't know that there is a hidden world.
Well, that's what I thought they were getting set up for. When he goes to that town meeting, and you have the people of Burk who have been there their entire lives, generations. I mean, they say it. I mean, and they've said it before.
Seven generations.
Yeah. I mean, this is their home, and I totally get that we've got a villain trying to destroy our village, but if you think about it, you're going to have people hunker down and say, we're going to just defend our home. Like, people are not just going to be like, let's leave to a place we don't know. Like,
and some people are going to say no.
And they're going to stay. Yeah.
They're going to stay. I mean, and I don't expect it to be that truthful to human nature. But, like, I mean, I just saw a thing on the news the other day about a town in, I think it was Alabama, maybe, that's like, the sea is rising, and they're
stay there.
Losing this town. Yeah. And they're like, hey, we'll give you all this land over here. And there are, and a lot of people are taking, but there are still people that are like,
on nope, their roof.
I don't believe it. As they're standing in their living room and waiters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get your point. And so that's what I was getting ready for. I was thinking this movie, especially with the courage they've had in the past, like Tom said, and how smart they've been, I was setting up for a little bit more of an internal struggle, like you said, but it's not what we got. And I really enjoyed this movie. And I just, I think that maybe that could have made it that much better. But you're always going to struggle with the studio, and it's a kid's movie, and you've got to keep them entertained. So I think at the end of the day, we understand why they have Grimmel and why they do some of the things that they do. So they're at what they've dubbed New Burk. They stop to rest. Like we said, they set up town there, and this is where Toothless senses, I guess he either hears or senses the Light Fury, but she wakes him up in the middle of the night. Toothless goes up after her, and this is when we get that hilarious mating dance scene, if you want to call that, where Toothless is trying to impress the Light Fury, and it's just absolutely hilarious. Hiccup ends up sneaking out after them, and he's kind of standing off on a hill and doing the, like, you got this, trying to coach him. And just to see the physical comedy of Hiccup's character and Toothless trying to recreate it, I mean, I was laughing out loud during this scene. I thought it was absolutely delightful. One of my favorite parts of the film. I just think that they had so much fun with it, especially when there are a lot of stakes and it does get pretty serious at other parts, but they found that perfect balance of when to get serious, you know, and when to have a lot of fun. And I thought this part was great. Did you guys?
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. And if I can speak to that real fast and also tie it back to what you guys were talking about regarding the hidden world, I think that dance scene is pretty arresting for a lot of the reasons we've talked about. But I also think that it's vital to the film thematically as well, because it cements the bond that forms between Toothless and the Night Fury, which in turn forms this interesting dichotomy where Hiccup realizes how and why Toothless needs to find his own growth, but it's going to come at the cost of something deeply personal for himself. And watching that unfold, as you guys have talked about in that last 20 minutes, is pretty gut-wrenching, at least for fans of this franchise. But I also think it ties into what you guys are saying about the hidden world, which I think the title, calling this the hidden world, is a red herring. I think it's dramatic irony, because I don't think this film was ever about Hiccup finding the hidden world or going on some adventure to find the hidden world. I think the film, first and foremost, is about exploring this idea of place and why it's important for us to be exactly where we needed to be. And in that, it actually reminded me a lot of Ralph Breaks the Internet last year. And in that film, it filters that through the lens of codependency and its ramifications when you rely too heavily on one person. And this film doesn't demonstrate it that verbatim, but in a similar way to Ralph and his dynamic with Vanellope, Hiccup veers dangerously close to being identity-less without Toothless, and it puts his entire clan in danger as it severely affects his decision-making. But it's in that why the flashbacks of the film that we were talking about earlier, I think, are sublime and important, and how Stoic reveals to Hiccup that it was his destiny to find the hidden world. But as I said, I think that's I think that's dramatic irony, because once Hiccup finds it, he realizes that it was never about him finding the hidden world. He has this epiphany that Toothless and where he's supposed to be, it's now at this place. He has his own kingdom to take care of, and that he can't selfishly keep him from that, even though in so many ways Toothless defines who Hiccup is. And that to me, I think, is the center of this film. It is the core that drives everything, which is why I was saying earlier, Grimmel and his kind of arbitrary, you know, the little things that he does in this film serve that purpose. It doesn't serve some sort of grand epic adventure that maybe you thought that you were going to get because of the marketing and we're going on, you know, the hidden world. And you see parts of it in the trailer and it's gorgeous. And I think all of that is a red herring. I think it has this film narratively doesn't care at all about trying to find the hidden world. It's all about place, where we are supposed to be, what are our identities inside of the places that we are supposed to be. That's what this film is all about. And you get it with Toothless, you get it with Hiccup, you get it with even the Light Fury as well. And of course, you know, the town of Burke and, you know, what they call home. Because there is a little pushback, or at least there's some dubiousness among some of the clan. But once they find the new Burke, that's where they want it to be. They even say, this is better than the last one.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's where the film thrives. And I think the emotion that comes with these films, that comes with those ideas, I think is as stimulating as we saw in the previous two. So I can understand your guys' narrative criticisms, but like I said, I think that's a red herring. I don't think the film really ever cared about any of that.
I like that. I mean, you said it perfectly. I really like how you drew the comparisons between Ralph Breaks the Internet, because it is the same sort of thing. I mean, going back to that mm-hmm. film, and you can go listen to that podcast, but as we said then, and for anyone that's seen it, Vanellope's place is somewhere else. You know, she's in this arcade, yeah. but she's destined for so much more. She knows that she does not feel at mm-hmm. home there, even though she has her best friend, Ralph, and so her place is Slaughter Race. And we find that, and mm-hmm. at the end of the film, both of the characters grow, I mean, especially Ralph, who's the one that really needs to grow, and he realizes that mm-hmm. you can't hold your friends back, you know, selfishly. You have to, you know, accept that some people belong in a different place, and that's okay. Like, it doesn't make them a bad friend or a bad mm-hmm. person, but yeah, I think that's a great comparison, and I like the idea of this movie really being more about these characters, their inner struggle with finding their place, and the hidden world is just a way to market it, to give people a great place mm-hmm. to look at, and to, you know, make it fancy and make it seem like an adventure. But yeah, I mean, there are some heart-wrenching moments. To Hiccup and Toothless, like you said, JD, both have to go through mm-hmm. this struggle. And from the very beginning, Hiccup is hesitant to let Toothless go. I mean, he goes after the Light Fury, and he can see how into her he is, and he doesn't really think, like, he automatically assumes, like, oh, well, he'll fall in love with the Light Fury will come live with us, and everyone will live happily ever after.
Yeah.
But more and more, he sees that, like, the Light Fury doesn't want anything to do with them. That's not where she belongs. And eventually, mm-hmm. when we get to the hidden world, and we see how the dragons live, and that beautiful relationship, like again, that JD said, when you see the way that they've bonded and the way that they have become kind of the alphas, and how they're the leaders of this hidden world and all the dragons, mm-hmm. and the way that they're connected, whether it's through like their physical touch, the way that they interact with one another, they did some amazing things with body language to show that. And so, yeah, I really love that. I agree. So thanks for making those comparisons. Sure. It's really a great movie where it can be entertaining. But it also, I mean, for the kids, you've got the hidden world and the fight scenes. And for us, you know, we get mm-hmm. to see the struggle of Hiccup.
I think it's interesting that Wreck-It Ralph and this both revolve around a relationship that can't be the character's primary relationship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like Hiccup and Toothless, like, at the end of the day, like they're never, you know, they're not going to be a couple that lasts forever. Like they're both, by virtue of definition, are going to have someone in their life who's more important than the other. Wreck-It Ralph is the same way.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a great comparison,
which is why I think it also circles back to the first film so gorgeously, in the sense that in that first film, obviously humans and dragons, they couldn't live together. It was just too dangerous. There was a lot of fighting, and you come back around to that idea in some ways in this third film, but obviously it's not, the relationship isn't contentious at all. There's still a loving relationship there, but it's also this idea that humans and dragons, maybe we aren't supposed to live together.
Right.
You know, it's just too difficult, and we all have our own place and where we need to be, but you know, experiencing three films and being invested in that relationship to come to that conclusion that maybe my dad was right, that we aren't supposed to be with dragons, but at least now we can live in peace with these dragons.
In harmony, yeah.
And so you get to that final conclusion at the end of the film, and it is just, it is gut-wrenching to see how those themes and ideas kind of, they come for a circle in a way that I just find incredibly provocative, but even just in terms of the, you know, the relationship dynamics there, it's stunning work. So well, I just love how it kind of reminded me of the end of Toy Story 3 in that sense, where, you know, cause the final shot of Toy Story 3 is the opening shot of the first Toy Story.
Yeah, right.
And this kind of functions in a very similar way.
Yeah. At the end of the day, this is, I think what we have to remember, so we've gone on now three of these grand adventures. We love Toothless. We love Hiccup. We love mm-hmm. the city of Burk, the village of Burk, and the people. Like, we want them to have dragons because they make fun adventures. But at the end of the day, they're humans, they're Vikings, and they're dragons. They're not mm-hmm. meant to mm-hmm. to be together. And so I like that evolution
exactly.
of this trilogy. Yeah. That in the first movie, it's humans, dragons bad, we hate dragons. No, dragons good, we can work together and fight together. And then, you know, as this goes on, you've gone from dragons bad to dragon's good, and maybe we shouldn't work together, but we both can coexist. So I really like the way that the humans have changed their mind, but they went too far in the first one. They let's make them our pets. Let's make them our equals, which, I mean, equals not in a bad way, but let's make it so that, yeah, we always fight together and work together, but they're animals in a cage. Mm-hmm. These are animals at the zoo. It's like, this would be like rescuing an animal. A baby bird falls out of the nest, or you find a lone lion cub.
Yeah.
You take it, you nurse it back to health. But at the end of the day, you're like, oh, I love this lion now. It's going to be my pet. Well, no, it doesn't. The lion.
Maybe that's not a good idea.
The lion doesn't. Even if the lion loves you, like Toothless loves Hiccup, that lion, that dragon does not belong with him.
Right.
He's helped him. He's done his part to help him grow and be safe and find where he's supposed to be. But you have to let it go. And what I really love is there was a great interview with Dean DeBlois, the director, and Kim Renfro, who is a writer, a journalist, film critic. And she interviewed the director, and she likened the end of this movie to that scene with the lion that grew up. What is Christian the lion? You guys, I'm sure, have seen this viral video, even if you don't know it by name. There's a lion that was nursed back to health by this guy, and he lets the lion go and join a pride and be a part of that world. And then years later, the zoologist, the guy, whoever raised him and nursed him back to health and let him go, meets up with him. And there's this real tension between the two. You've seen this viral video. It's a few years old, but I know you've seen it, where this huge lion comes up and there's this human. And you're like, oh, my God, dude, like this lion is kind of standoffish. The human's looking like lunch. And then Christian jumps on him and plays with him, and they roll around and hug and embrace. And so that the end scene of this movie, the director was directly inspired by that video. So that's why there's such a comparison. But
for sure.
But that is, in a sense, what this movie is about. I mean, you have to let people, you have to let things go, and people have to be able to live where they belong. But that doesn't mean that you still can't hang out and coexist in the end.
I think the important thing to note in all of that is that Grimmel adds dick to any of that.
Well, I think that's what it's. Let's make a kids movie with an adventure. You could take Grimmel out of this and still find a way to make it work.
And I think you'd have a much better movie.
But maybe that would be an adult movie and not a kids movie. Like I think
at some point you have to go where the story wants to go, and I feel like the story wanted to go hidden world relationship between Toothless and Hiccup, and how that can't be, at least in its current incarnation.
But that's what JD, like, as much as the hidden world was a red herring, Grimmel's a red herring too. I mean, he's just
But I don't feel like the hidden world still works within the context of the story. I don't think Grimmel does.
I think it's
arbitrary conflict. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, I definitely can see what you mean. I just think it just makes the movie more of a...
If you wanted conflict for conflict's sake, I think it makes more sense to have one of the other townspeople of Burke become some sort of rival trying to undermine them going to the hidden world. I think that makes more sense and could weave in better, because every time they went to Grimmel, I was just like, don't care.
I do think he serves a purpose for the arc of the Light Fury and the ideas of trust that come with that in the film, because as you said earlier, Kevin, that she doesn't trust humans. And why should she? I mean, she's been abused. She's been in cages for God knows how long. So, of course, she's not going to trust humans. And even once she's around Toothless and she sees Hiccup a little bit, she's still very wary of him. But there is an evolution that by the end of the film, because of the danger that she's put in, where her and Toothless are, you know, they're caught, they need someone to come save them. And so as Hiccup does, there comes that moment where Hiccup makes an extreme sacrifice that gives her an epiphany of her own, where she realizes that, okay, well, Hiccup isn't like these other humans. He's clearly making a sacrifice for my life and for Toothless. And so then it brings back those ideas of trust. It brings that full circle in a way that I feel like is complementary to those other ideas.
That's a tremendous talking about growth. So, I mean, the fact that the Light Fury goes from being a caged animal, scared of humans, wants to blow Hiccup up on sight, doesn't matter, she's not asking questions first, blow up later. I mean, she sees a human, she mm-hmm. wants to kill them. Two, eventually, mm-hmm. you know, spoilers, that's what we do, saving his life. I think that's a tremendous growth, and she's not even really a main character, but we see Hiccup grow, we see Toothless grow, but think about what it takes, just like JD said. So I do think that's a beautiful mm-hmm. Growth of that character as well. Eventually, she leaves. The Light Fury leaves. Toothless wants to chase her, can't, because of course we know he has that tail injury. Hiccup has made contraptions that he can control. He's never really quite gotten it. He worked on a way so that Toothless could control it, but Toothless doesn't like the fake tail and the mechanism and all that, but now he's faced with, you know, he cannot go and be with this Light Fury. So Hiccup works on a new invention. It's a really fun scene. I like how they get the black paint and everything, and Gobber's there, and it's a fun scene. But at the end of the day, Hiccup has to let Toothless go, and so Toothless takes the new tail, flies off. I think he says, like, I'll see you tonight, and that never happens. I mean, Toothless is gone now, and he thinks Toothless is going to come back, but you know, Toothless is off doing his Light Fury thing that we're going to get to. And so their idea is, we need to go and we need to stop Grimmel. That's the Viking's goal.
Just to recap, Toothless used a piece of dragon tail to get a piece of dragon tail.
Ah. That's why you're here.
Oh, boy.
So their idea is, we have to go stop these Vikings. So Cate Blanchett's character, Hiccup's mom, goes and does some scouting, finds that they are heading to Newburgh. You know, they've been tracking the Light Fury and still trying to get Toothless. So they go and try to head them off. Big fight scene. They narrowly escape. You know, this time, like Steve said earlier, Grimmel has Hiccup dead to rights. Similar, you know, he one-upped him, but they were able to narrowly escape. Is it Roughnut is left behind? She's the female.
Yeah, Roughnut.
Okay. Roughnut's left behind, the most annoying character in any animated series, but that's neither here nor there. So she, I mean, literally, that's her job.
That's literally how she escapes.
Exactly. She's aware of it.
So she,
it's the Ransom of Red Chief.
What is that?
It's a famous short story.
Is it?
Where these people, like, abduct a child. It's an old, before child abduction was scary, and it could be a cute element of a kid's story. But they abduct a child, and the kid's so obnoxious that they give him. And I think the parents don't even pay the ransom, because they're like, good.
Oh, jeez.
Like, yeah, you just keep them. And
it annoys them to death. And you're just like, oh my God, shut up, you're so annoying. And you realize, oh, it's exactly what she wants. And so she annoys him to death, but he, again, smart. I mean, this is the Moriarty to the Sherlock. I mean, Grimmel knows what he's doing, and he says, oh, just go already. But the whole time he knows, well, you're going to lead us right to Newburgh. This is exactly what we need. So she
and she hints that, like, she says something about, like, the new base.
Yeah,
like,
she's
how old he has fish.
She's, I mean, she is. She's a very dumb, funny, stupid character, though, and she has a big mouth. And so she leads them right to Newburgh. And so, you know, she's like, you know, smell you later, peace out, and rides off. And then Grimmel's standing there with his grimace. You know, he's ready to go find him. So this whole time, you know, they're just freaked out. They've got Roughnut is captured before she comes back, and you know they want to go find Toothless, and Hiccup's freaking out over that. And basically, there's another flashback at this point. So Hiccup is flashing back to the dad, and this is after his mom dies, and there's a really nice moment again where this is where I'm like, Gerard Butler, Jesus, you can act. Like, I think it's just a really touching mm-hmm. scene where he's, you know, emotional at the fireplace, and Hiccup comes down the stairs, and I think he even does he have a Night Fury stuffed animal. It's like, I mean, he loves dragons. He's loved dragons his whole life, and he's holding a little stuffed dragon toy. But a really nice emotional scene between the two of them. Toothless is gone. Roughnut has led Grimmel back to Newburgh, and Grimmel's able to take every dragon. So Toothless is the alpha, and all the dragons, as we've seen earlier, follow Toothless. And so they end up capturing Toothless. They capture the Light Fury, and all the dragons are led away. And so you're like, crap, no dragons. They've learned to depend on these dragons so much. Now it's like, what do we do? Hiccup is feeling like a complete failure. He has kind of throughout this whole movie, and now he's obviously really bummed out. And Astrid goes to talk to him. His mom talks to her and says, he listens to you. And again, just a really nice scene, a really nice emotional scene between the two of them. And she basically says, this is your time to step up. You got to do what you got to do. I don't remember the whole thing, but it's a really nice scene where he realizes that he needs to take charge. He is the king, and Toothless does not define him. He loves Toothless. Toothless is great. The dragons are great, but mm-hmm. he can be a great leader, and it's his time to step up. And so he eventually mm-hmm. he ends up making wingsuits, like we saw in the previous film. He makes wingsuits for all his people, and it's time to go get the dragons back. So he steps up to the plate.
Did I skip over when they go to the hidden world? Was that before this or is this after? I just want to make sure I don't, because that's a pretty.
It was right before the wingsuit.
Right before sequence. The wingsuit. Okay. So before they get captured, I should say, because this is kind of leading right up to the last 25 minutes that we're all speaking so highly of. They try to go get Toothless because Toothless, you know, he's been gone for several days. Hiccup's freaking out. And so him and Astrid leave on their dragon. And to Tom's point, they head in that direction. And just over yonder is the hidden world, the hidden world. But anyway, so they get there. There's this vortex. They go into this like huge waterfall tornado vortex type thing. And they enter the hidden world. And it's this beautiful, amazing world. Not to take away any credit from them, because this is amazing imagery. It's really breathtaking. But I'm just like, this is Pandora.
It's very Pandora.
I mean, I've seen it before. I'm just like, it would have been that much more amazing had I not seen Avatar. Right. Had I not been on Flight of Passage at Disney World. I mean, there's no, I'm not trying to hate on this movie.
There's a lot of aspects of my life that would have been more amazing if I hadn't seen Avatar.
That's true. But I mean, there's no debate here. I mean, I saw this and I'm like, this is amazing. I loved it at Disney World. I loved it in Avatar. Right. So not as original as I think they could have been. I mean,
they're still visually entrancing.
Absolutely. I mean, it's stunning, and Avatar was too. That's my only thing is when, you know, I looked at my wife and we were at this showing a few weeks ago, you know, and I'm just like, oh my God, it's Pandora. And we've been to Disney a few times recently and we always ride that ride and it's amazing. I'm just like, yeah, it's that cave that you go in at the Flight of Passage. But anyway, so they get to the hidden world. But the important thing here, like JD mentioned earlier and we alluded to, is we see Toothless and Light Fury in their element. We see all these dragons, and up on this pedestal, up on this high rock, you've got, you know, the Alpha, as we've come to discover that all the dragons listen to him, and these two are ruling as basically king and queen of all these dragons, and it's just their natural environment. You see their bond, you see them again, the physical contact, you see how different Toothless looks. I mean, here's goofy Toothless that we always see joking around and trying to dance around and be goofy, and now you see this leader, you see stoic, you know, he looks like a lion up on the top of a rock, you know, and leading his people. And so it really just a different environment, but this is when it really clicks to Hiccup that it's like, wow, this is where he belongs. Something happens, I don't know, they step on another twig or whatever, but they're discovered. All the dragons, because again, these dragons don't like humans. They're not used to them. They live in this hidden world for a reason. They all go chasing. Another great action sequence. I thought this was a lot of fun. But Astrid and Hiccup are trying to avoid dying at the hands of all these gigantic dragons who are chasing them. Toothless swoops in to save the day. He rides off, but you also see, like, you see that Toothless is happy to save Hiccup, but you also see like that he's leaving, you know, we're, you know, looking back the whole time, like, I missed them already. And Hiccup realizes it. And he talks to him and he says, you know, buddy, I get it. Like, you don't belong with here. You belong there. And it's a really another really great emotional beat that these movies do between Hiccup and Toothless, because we have seen this bond grow so much. And at this point you realize what it means to him to let Toothless go. So another really nice emotional scene here. The Light Fury shows up though, and then this is when it's either Hiccup or Astrid, like, oh well, maybe we don't have to go, maybe we can all live here. Like, hey, the Light Fury's here to hang out with us, she will stay. But no, she's there to lead the bad guys, because Roughnut shows back up and they're all there to lead Grimmel right to them. So that's when they capture the two dragons. They take all their dragons. Fast forward, they get the wingsuits. And this is where the last just half hour is awesome. I mean, this is the film really excels, not only in the action set pieces. I mean, it's great action, great teamwork with them all teaming up and getting their dragons back into safety. And then we get to the ending of the movie, which is just fantastic. But I thought this looked great. Maybe, Tom, did this ending scene wasn't as dark. There wasn't a lot of...
Yeah, I mean, I felt like it corrected that.
This was perfection. This was, you know, the camera work was beautiful, wide shots, nothing hidden. But yeah, it's them taking back their dragons and battling. Really good fight sequence. A lot of good comedy interjected, you know, with all the Vikings, with Fish Legs, you know, and his little baby dragon, and then the huge dragon that ends up coming and saving the day. So a lot of good comedic elements and all that. And then we get to the real gut punch, which JD mentioned earlier, towards right before the film wraps up, which is that you've got Hiccup on Toothless, and you have the bad guy chasing after him with his evil dragons. And as Toothless is... Toothless is shot with a tranquilizer. Grimmel shoots a tranquilizer dart at Toothless, and he is incapacitated as Hiccup jumps off of Toothless.
Yeah, they aren't on the Light Fury at that point.
The Night Fury and the Light Fury, both of them are like hung upside down and they're in these harnesses.
Yeah.
He gets Toothless free and he gets the Light Fury free and disconnects that harness. Hiccup frees her, but then he says, you have to go save him. And that's when you see this first struggle with the Light Fury, because she's like, but mm-hmm. You need to, you know, and he's just like, go save him. And so another really nice emotional beat where Grimmel is like, you're going to kill us both if you let go. And he has to make that decision. It's either save Toothless or save himself. And so Hiccup lets go. You see the dramatic slow motion drop of both Grimmel and him falling, free fall, slow motion. Mm-hmm. The Light Fury goes and at the last moment is able to kind of tackle Toothless to safety. She goes and catches him, and they both roll off on a cliff over to the side here. And then as you see both Grimmel and Hiccup falling to their death, the Light Fury swoops in and saves them. And it's a beautiful moment. She has, you know, and we see that that bond has grown and the Light Fury as a character has grown. And so he's saved. Meanwhile, Grimmel's hanging on by Hiccup's mechanical leg or his peg leg or whatever you want to call that. And so, of course, he loosens it and he falls to the sea. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it wraps up. And all the dragons are saved. Grimmel has been dealt with. But now this is all leading up to these dragons don't belong here, right? So they're all saved, but like they need to let them go. And more specifically, Hiccup needs to let Toothless go. And so really emotional moment. This comes from the trailer. You see Hiccup's hand on Toothless's head. You know, it's a real gut punch, because this is what all these three movies have been leading up to and the bond we've seen grown. And he finally is okay with letting Toothless go. As hard as it is, he knows it's the right thing. Mm-hmm. We let them go and they go off. And then this is where we get the big time jump, which I think is 10 years later.
Something like that.
And again, the reason that they did this, Deblois said that he wanted to give time for the characters to grow and to find their own. So that we get a chance to see that Hiccup is obviously aged up. He has a family of his own. You know, he's older. He's got his big beard. And they have two. Him and Astrid have two kids. Meanwhile, Toothless and the Light Fury have started a family of their own.
He's no longer Toothless because he has dentures. This is how you know he's older. Yeah.
At the hidden, they have dentists at the Hidden World.
Right.
That's not a hidden dentist practice. It's right there. We flash forward, and so this is what you see in the very first trailer for the movie. So not having seen the movie, you wouldn't really understand this narration. Now going back, like, I was getting chills as I went back and watched trailer one from last year of this movie. It is Hiccup narrating, you know, there used to be dragons, and even talking about it, seriously, I get chills. Like, this is such an amazing narration, and you just know how much heart is behind it. He is narrating to his kids about dragons. His kids grew up in a world where there's no dragons, just like he grew up, you know, hearing about dragons, reading about dragons, but he never saw them. These kids are little Hiccup, and he's there were dragons, and he talks about their whole story and what they've done. And so they head out on a ship, Astrid, Hiccup, and their two kids. And I really like what they did. I think any lesser of a writer or a director would make a baby Hiccup look just like Hiccup, baby Astrid look just a bit like Astrid, and they switch it. They have a little girl that has Hiccup's hair color, a little boy with blonde hair like Astrid. Yeah. I just like how they did that. It was more of a surprise, like, oh, okay, yeah, they don't have to look like carbon copies of each parent. So
I thought it was creepy that one of the dragon children look like Hiccup.
Oh,
I thought that was a bridge too far.
So you think maybe deleted scene?
Yeah.
But yeah, beautiful, beautiful moment. And that's why, like I said, when you say stick the landing, like, you know, if you could hold up a sign that had 11 on it as far as the landing of this movie.
I didn't care for this last scene.
Oh my God.
I think it takes place too soon.
Wow. Too soon after. But I mean, you realize the 10-year time jump, but you think it's too close.
I think it's too soon. I think it's too soon in the timeline of the movie. Because first off, like, the whole, like, there used to be dragons. Yeah, like 20 minutes ago. Like, it's not that. Like, I mean, they're still surrounded by people who remember dragons. Like, it's
based
not.
Based on the kids' a story.
I get that. But they grew up in a world where every single person they know remembers dragons. It wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's not this long ago, far away world. It's been like, you know, it's been it's been 10 years. It's not that long. Oh. And so I don't think dragons would have taken on this mythical nature that quickly. Like, but there's still dragon poop like that they could step in. It's not been that long.
But I mean, like, okay, I get what you're saying, but I mean,
I think the kid should have been old. I think it should have been him as an old man explaining it to his grandkids. Oh. Like, that I think would have had more resonance, but that whole speech didn't work for me because I'm like, it hasn't been that long. Like, literally every adult they know and even a lot of kids that they know are gonna remember a world where there was dragons. It's not this big giant mystery they're making it out to be.
Teach their own. I mean, I can't argue.
I disagree.
I just feel like, I mean, to me, it's a lot can happen in 10 years. I mean, especially in our world, which obviously has a lot more as far as social media and the way that news changes. And like 10 years to us is rapid, but 10 years to anyone, I feel like you can, if you haven't seen a dragon in 10 years, like I think of, like, I remember Circuit City. I remember Barnes and Noble or Borders. You know, I remember all these stores. I used to work at Circuit City, but it wasn't that long ago. There was a Circuit City. I can hardly remember it. I worked there, but like, I just feel like you can grow and in 10 years, a lot can change. And you know, these dragons, it's not like, even though there's stories in them, like, I think you can forget really easily. You get tied up in your own things. And, you know, 10 years ago to me seems like a lifetime ago.
I think it also works because, and again, you know, perhaps it's just in the way that we interpret these films. But for me, this whole series was about not the mythical allure of dragons. It's about coexisting with dragons. That's what this whole series has been about. So for me, when I see that final scene, it's much, much more powerful to see these little kids who haven't seen a dragon of their own. They've only heard about their dad talk about his experience with dragons. So as they see Toothless for the first time, of course they're going to be scared. They've never had this happen to them before. But they see Toothless interact with their dad in a way that alleviates that fear in a lot of ways. They see the coexistence. They see the actual peace that can form between a human and a dragon. And that, to me, is much more powerful than an older version telling his grandkids about, you know, what dragons used to be. Because for me, the series was never about that. It was always about coexisting, and seeing these little kids actually experience that, I thought was really resonant, especially because of the callbacks to how they touched Toothless, which is verbatim to how Hiccup did it in the first film. I thought that was a pretty brilliant touch. So
full circle.
I think it works on an emotional level, just in terms of what we see there, but it thematically brings closure to the whole series.
It's, yeah, and you know, to each their own, like we said before. But I found it was just beautiful. I mean, it was such an emotional scene, and him talking to the kids, but also with his friend, that much like that lion video I mentioned earlier, in this 10 years, Toothless and the dragons have not seen humans. I mean, they've bonded. We saw how quickly they bonded even when they went to the hidden world. And of course he realized, you know, who Hiccup was, but still, he was still kind of out in his own headspace and in his own mind, not really thinking as much about Hiccup because he's distracted with his own stuff. And so I feel like they've gone and they haven't seen humans in 10 years. They haven't seen dragons in 10 years. And both of them don't quite know like what to think, you know, and are these humans going to hurt me? Are these dragons going to hurt me? Do they remember us? Do we remember each other, kind of a thing? And it was a really nice moment. And that full circle with the sniffing and, you know, Hiccup going right up to him and then him remembering him. And the director said in that interview that Kim Renfro did, the director said, like, was Toothless messing with Hiccup? That was the question, right? Was he like acting like, I'm going to get you, and then, no, I remember you. Hey, buddy, what's up? And no, like Deblois said that his intention was that Toothless really didn't remember him for a second. You know, he just, it had been 10 years. It was long enough for him to.
That beard threw him off.
Yeah. He's like, Toothless, yeah, he looks manly. Exactly. That's not the Hiccup I knew. But he really wanted it to be like, hey, are you okay? Are you who I think you are? Do I remember you? And then all the memories come back and you have that emotional moment and a beautiful send off with then, each of them is on a dragon. Astrid is on the light.
Yeah, watching them ride this dragon at the end, I was like, what an awful parent.
Right, throwing him up in the air. I know. I, as a parent, I was nervous for the kids, totally, but I again...
I was like, you were awful. We freaked out when Michael Jackson just dangled a baby over a balcony, and you're flipping him from dragon to dragon.
It's, yeah, you know, I mean, again, this is like one of those stakes where you're just like, obviously nothing's going to happen. So it was fun. They're switching dragons. Each of the kids takes a turn, and then, you know, they switch dragons, switch kids, and... It's just a really touching moment, and I think a really fitting conclusion. It's a beautiful, beautiful one of the, I think one of the most beautiful conclusions to a trilogy, and I loved it. So, Steve, I know you didn't get to say your piece. What did you feel about the conclusion?
I mean, you guys pretty much summed it up. What I was thinking. I mean, as far as Tom's point about it not being far enough down the timeline, far enough into the future. I really just there's no evidence that he didn't, you know, introduce his grandkids on the road too. This is just him wanting to be like, hey, look, Toothless, this is, look at these babies. That's what I made.
I just felt like it hadn't been a long enough period of time. I just think for me, it would have had more emotional resonance if like he went the rest of his life without seeing dragons, because now it kind of feels like, oh, they'll probably be swinging by once a week, taking dragon rides. Like it, you know what I mean? And that, they'll find this new kind of way to coexist, and I think I would have liked it better if it would there would have been I think it would have been more dramatic for me if there had been a much longer period of time that he went without seeing dragons, and that it would have been easier for me to believe that dragons had fallen into the realm of mythology, because in 10 years, like, you know, you're still 80% of Burke is going to be like, no, there were totally dragons. Like, it's not going to be this big giant myth.
I think it has to be about the kids. I mean, I totally get your point. I'm not trying to argue. I just, from my point of view, I think it's all about the kids. The kids have never seen dragons. Like, God forbid, and I don't want this to happen, and I don't, hopefully it won't. But like, let's say lions went extinct. I'm just going to keep using the Christian, the lion analogy. If lions go extinct, I've seen lions at the zoo. I've seen footage. I mean, these people have no TVs, no internet, so they can't even see videos of dragons, right? All they have is stories. But if lions went extinct, and even though I've seen them and have been around them, and I tell my kids about lions, and let's say I couldn't show them pictures or videos, and then they see one in real life, like, even though we still know about lions, but we think they're extinct, or we don't know where they are or what they're doing, I think to see one in 10 years after never seeing or knowing what's happening with lions would be pretty amazing. But for my kids who have never seen them, only heard me talk about Lion King of the Jungle with these huge manes and the commanding presence and whatever, you know, like I think a kid would be nervous like these kids were. I think they'd be in amazement. And then, not that you go ride lions, but, you know, then to especially be able to interact with them.
You can, but only once.
Right. It's only once. Yeah. So I
also don't think it, for them to be where they are supposed to be, so to speak, I don't think that also means that they can't ever see each other. I don't think it's mutually exclusive like that. I mean, we saw that in Ralph Breaks the Internet as well. Just because Vanellope is in her new game now doesn't mean they can't ever see each other. It just means that they have their own identities and their own places. And it's the same thing here. I don't think the ending of the film is suggesting that humans can never see dragons ever again. Like, I don't think it was ever supposed to veer into that territory as much as it is. And so for me, again, it's all about those ideas of coexistence. It's, you know, him showing his kids these things for the first time.
Coexistence is one thing, and I totally agree with you. But to Tom's point, I think what he's saying is that it's only been 10 years, and now that they found each other, he feels like there's going to be a barbecue every weekend. Like, the worlds are supposed to be different. They can live together, but you're still not riding. Yeah. Now we're back to riding them and training them. And if dragons are coming around even to visit, someone is going to think, oh, can we train them? And then we've got How to Train Your Dragon again, and
I didn't read into the scene that way, but...
No, and I didn't either. We're just projecting, like, it's inevitable. Yeah. If now we see them, it's not going to be like, okay, well, we'll see in 10 years, like maybe in a year or 6 months, like, let's go visit Toothless.
Sure.
Right. And then it's next week. Fair enough. And then we're just writing the story, but it's like, once you take them from being this huge deal, they're separate, and now that they're back together, you can only imagine that now maybe they're going to coexist again. So it opens up that door, but I didn't take it that way, and I enjoyed it, but
I didn't either.
I can see it. I can definitely see your point. So, but yeah, that's it. I mean, that wraps up the trilogy. And I mean, is this going to be one of those Toy Story 4 situations, or are we pretty sure that this is conclusively, I mean, I know never say never, but are there any words of a fourth one? Is anyone even thinking of it? Or
my gut tells me that they're done just because it took so long to get this one.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Yeah, it's a perfect ending to the trilogy, so I would be completely fine with never, as much as I like them, I don't need to see another.
But I will say that I don't think we'll get another feature. I wouldn't be surprised if you get another Netflix show and maybe he follows his kids.
A spinoff completely, but Hiccup and Toothless's journey, I think, has to be over, and it shouldn't be touched. This is a great way to end it.
They said the same thing about Toy Story 3, and here we are.
That's what I was going to say.
I know.
I just don't think that this property is as much of a juggernaut for them as Toy Story is. Like
Toy Story is the movie that built Pixar.
Yeah.
And there's still that love where, I mean, this is great and it has a huge following, but it's not on Toy Story level.
Right.
Where it's associated with DreamWorks. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not like you can't have DreamWorks without How to Train Your Dragon.
Right.
There's other things, whereas Pixar is like,
if you think DreamWorks, you think Shrek.
Shrek is what built DreamWorks, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I loved it. I think that it was great. So, a great way to end the trilogy.
Awesome. Well, I guess we will wrap this up. And JD, why don't you tell people where they can find you and about your show one more time?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being on.
This was a lot of fun. You guys can find us at InSessionFilm.com. There you can find links to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. Links to social media there as well. And of course, we have all of our shows. We have written content like reviews and other featured articles. And again, all of that is at InSessionFilm.com.
Awesome.
My name is Steve Kelly. You can find my writings on ReviewSTL.com. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook at TheGodCavs.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online on Facebook.com/Real Spoilers or at our website, RealSpoilers.com, or on Twitter at Real Spoilers. And while you're on the Facebook page, go ahead and click like, join the League of Show Sharers. And also don't forget our Patreon at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So coming up next week, Greta, I guess.
We'll see.
I think that's the biggest movie coming out.
Movie that looks pretty good. Yeah. I really like Chloe Grace Moritz, and it looks creepy. I saw a trailer before. I don't think I would have saw it before this, but what was that? Oh, Happy Death Day to You.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the last ones I saw in theaters. I saw a trailer, and I'm like, this is creepy. I like it. This is interesting.
Yeah, so I think that's probably the biggest one next week, so that is probably what's on the menu. So thanks for tuning in.
And what did you think of the Oscars?
Oh, you know me. I don't care.
All those wins. Were you glad that one person won?
I never watch. I so don't care. Like, I'm like, if anything interesting happens, it'll be on YouTube. I don't need to spend 4 hours of my life watching it.
Did you at least like that joke, though?
But sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not the other one that everyone is so upset about.
Really?
Yeah.
I was indifferent.
So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Elliot destroys Dr. Terminus's traveling wagon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.